For tonight's story, kids, I want you guys to think about one thing, and that's creepypastas. Creepypastas are online urban legends. They spread in the same way that any other urban legend would spread in real life. A simple tale about a monster in the dark, something that can come at you out of nowhere. A little girl who stands by your bed and watches you sleep. A boy with a cut face climbs in your window with a knife. A tall man in the trees. And all these just get copied and pasted, or copied and pasted, or creepypasted around the internet, right? You never really think about those things existing in real life. Because they're fiction. Creepypastas are fiction. But people like the Axeman. Surprisingly, even with a name like that, was real. From May 1918 to October 1919 in New Orleans, Louisiana, a serial killer ran rampant. This serial killer was named Axeman by the public, due to the way he murdered his victims. His first two victims were a grocer, an Italian man named Joseph Maggio, and his wife, Catherine Maggio. They were murdered on May 23rd, 1918. The couple were sleeping in their apartment located above the grocery store. The killer broke into that apartment, slit their throats with a straight razor. After he slit their throats, he bashed their heads in with an axe. When the police arrived at the crime scene, they discovered the bloody clothes of the murderer. It was stated that the murderer had changed into a set of clean clothes before fleeing the scene to avoid any suspicion. As the police continued their investigation, they were able to rule out the cause of the attack to be a robbery, as their money and valuables were left untouched. Near the crime scene, a message was written in chalk. The message read, "Mrs. Joseph Maggio will sit up tonight. Just right, Mrs. Tony." Police questioned multiple suspects, however, they were all released for a lack of evidence to tie them to the murders. On June 27th, 1918, a little over a month after the first attack, another couple was attacked early in the morning. The victims were a grocer named Louis Besumer and his mistress, Harriet Lowe. The couple lived in the apartment that was located behind the store. When the store was not open in the morning, someone went to check on them and discovered them in a pool of blood. Besumer was struck above his right temple by an axe. Lowe was struck above her left ear. Although both suffered traumatic attacks, they were both still alive. Again, multiple suspects were questioned for the crime. They were all released on a lack of evidence. The crime was reported in multiple newspapers. Many of the newspapers focused on the fact that Lowe was Besumer's mistress, and the fact that it was a scandal instead of the attack itself. On August 5th, 1918, Lowe had surgery to correct the partial paralysis of her face that was caused by the attack. However, 2 days after the surgery, Lowe died. Before Lowe died, she stated that she believed Louis Besumer was the one who attacked her. He was charged with murder and served 9 months in prison. On May 1st of 1919, Louis Besumer was acquitted for the crime after a 10-minute jury deliberation. Also on August 5th, 1918, a third attack was reported. The attack was on Mrs. Edward Schneider, who was 8 months pregnant at the time. Schneider woke up to a dark figure standing above her. Her husband returned home from work to discover her shortly after midnight. Her scalp had been cut open, and her face was completely covered in blood. She survived her attack and gave birth to a baby girl 2 days after the attack. One man was arrested, however, he was released due to a lack of evidence. Police had suspected that the attack of Schneider was related to the previous attack on Besumer and Maggio. 5 days after the attack on Schneider, on August 10th, 1918, another grocer named Joseph Romano was attacked. Romano lived with his two nieces. His two nieces woke to a loud commotion in their uncle's room. They went into Romano's room to check on him and discovered their uncle on the ground with a fatal injury to his head. Although the injury was serious, Romano was able to walk to the ambulance. However, Romano died 2 days after the attack. Romano's nieces also stated that they saw the attacker running from the scene. The girls described the attacker to be a dark-skinned, heavyset man that wore a dark suit and a slouched hat. The crime was noted to be similar to the previous attacks. All locations were ransacked, but nothing was stolen. The attacker used the owner's hatchet and blades. The panels of the room and windows were chiseled, so the attacker could gain entry into the homes. Finally, the majority of the victims were of Italian descent. The attackers and murderers were causing fear in New Orleans. The police were busy with reports from the public claiming that they had seen the Axeman lurking around in neighborhoods. Axes were reported to have been tampered with and were found in backyards, and doors and windows were also altered and chiseled. Citizens started to carry loaded shotguns, and families started to take turns watching over their other family members at night to prevent another attack. One report that the police received was the Axeman was dressed and acting like a woman. Another report was that some had witnessed the Axeman leaping over a back fence. The public continued to panic of the unknown surrounding the Axeman. It is believed that due to this widespread panic, the Axeman stopped attacking due to his own fear of being killed by a citizen defending themselves with a weapon. As time passed, the fear of the Axeman began to lessen, and the neighborhoods returned to normal. However, on March 10, 1919, the Axeman attacked another individual. Charles Cartamiglia, also a grocer, his wife Rosie, and their 2-year-old daughter Mary were attacked in their homes in Gretna. This town is located across the Mississippi River from New Orleans. Their screams were heard by their neighbor, a grocer, named Lorlando Giordano. Giordano rushed across the street to investigate and found the three attacked. Rosie woke up and found her husband was struggling with a large man holding an axe. The attacker disabled Charles by hitting him in the head with the axe. The attacker then attacked Rosie and Mary. Rosie begged for her life and the life of her daughter. Her pleas were left unheard, and the Axeman attacked them. When Giordano arrived, he discovered Charles lying in a pool of blood. Rosie was in the doorway with a head wound, holding a deceased Mary. The Cartamiglia couple were rushed to the hospital where they were treated for skull fractures. Charles was released 2 days after the attack, however his wife remained in the care of the doctors. Once Rosie had gained full consciousness, she stated that they were attacked by their neighbor, Lorlando Giordano, and his son, Frank Giordano. Although Lorlando had poor health and Frank was too large to fit through the back panel of the back door, they were arrested. Charles denied his wife's claims, however, the pair were charged with the murders and were found guilty. Frank was to be hanged, and his father was given life in prison. After the trials, Charles divorced his wife. A year after the events, Rosie reversed her claim, stating that she had falsely accused the two out of spite and jealousy. Since there was not any physical evidence, just Rosie's word against Giordano's, they were released from prison shortly after. Following the attack on the Cartamiglias that resulted in the death of their daughter, the panic in New Orleans arose again. The public began to arm themselves once again. The police stated that they believed that all the crimes were committed by the same man. The police stated that they believed he was, quote, a bloodthirsty maniac filled with a passion for human slaughter. On March 14, 1919, a newspaper received a letter from the Axeman. The letter stated, "Hell, March 13, 1919. Esteemed mortal, they have never caught me, and they never will. They have never seen me, for I am invisible, even as the ether that surrounds your earth. I am not a human being, but a spirit, and a demon from the hottest hell. I am what you Orleanians and your foolish police call the Axeman. When I see fit, I shall come and claim other victims. I alone know whom they shall be. I shall leave no clue except my bloody axe. besmeared with blood and brains of he whom I have sent below to keep me company. If you wish, you may tell the police to be careful not to rile me. Of course, I am a reasonable spirit. I take no offense at the way they have conducted their investigation in the past. In fact, they've been so utterly stupid as to not only amuse me, but His Satanic Majesty, Francis Joseph. But tell them to be aware. Let them not try to discover what I am. For it was better that they were never born than to incur the wrath of the Axeman. I don't think there's any need of such a warning, for I feel sure the police will always dodge me, as they have in the past. They're wise and know how to keep away from all harm. Undoubtedly, you Orlanians think of me as a most horrible murderer, which I am. But I could be much worse if I wanted to, if I wished. I could pay a visit to your city every night. At will, I could slay thousands of your best citizens, for I am in close relationship with the Angel of Death. Now, to be exact, at 12:15 earthly time, on next Tuesday night, March 19th, 1919, I'm going to pass over New Orleans. In my infinite mercy, I'm going to make a little proposition to you people. Here it is. I'm very fond of jazz music, and I swear by all the devils in the nether regions that every person shall be spared in those homes. A jazz band is in full swing at the time I have just mentioned. If everyone has a jazz band going, well then, so much the better for you people. One mention. If everyone has a jazz band going, oh, but one thing is certain, and that is that some of your people who do not have jazz on Tuesday night, if there be any, will get the axe. Well, as I am cold and crave the warmth of my native Tartarus, and it is about time I leave your earthly home, I will cease my discourse, hoping that thou wilt publish this, that it may go well with thee. I have been, am, and always will be the worst spirit that ever existed, either fact or realm of fancy. The Axeman. The newspaper published the letter, and the public did, as the Axeman told them to. Citizens all over New Orleans listened to jazz music on March 19th. Music was heard throughout homes and parties were in full swing. That night, the Axeman did not claim any victims. On August 10th, 1919, grocer Steve Boca was attacked while he slept. Boca awoke to a dark figure looming over him. The attacker hit Boca in the head with an axe. Boca survived the attack. Once he awoke, he ran to his neighbor's home, where he collapsed again. He was treated for his injuries, however, he could not remember the details of his attacker. Like the other attacks, nothing was stolen from his home, and the back door paneling was chiseled. On September 2nd, 1919, a pharmacist, William Carson, escaped a possible attack from the Axeman. Carson shot multiple shots at the intruder. The attacker left a broken door and an axe behind the scene. The next day, September 3rd, a young girl named Sarah Lawman was attacked with an axe while she was asleep in her locked home. Her neighbors discovered her in her bed unconscious. She had a severe head injury and was missing several teeth. Lawman suffered from a concussion, but survived her attack. The axe used in her attack was found, bloody, in the front lawn. Panic arose in New Orleans. However, for 2 months, there was not another attack by the Axeman. The last attack documented occurred on October 27, 1919. Grocer Mike Pipton was murdered. His wife heard a noise coming from their bedroom. While she went to check what it was, she discovered a large man wielding an axe. He was fleeing the scene. Mike was killed in the attack, and his wife and 6 children were not harmed. Mrs. Pepton could not describe the murderer. The axe was found at the scene, and the back door was chiseled. The police continued to investigate the cases. However, nothing came from the investigation. Mike Pepton was the last known victim, and to this day, the attacks and the murders on the Axeman remain unsolved. What I want you guys to take away from tonight's episode is that urban legends always come from something. Maybe they're not as much smoke and mirrors, monsters. Maybe sometimes they're people with a vendetta, people who think they're demons, people who think they're monsters. Maybe in the case of this episode, just people with an axe. But I want you guys to think about something, that all of these negative things, all of this murder, attacks, they stem from one person, one twisted idea. And for you guys out there, you kids, stay away from those ideas as much as you can. And maybe we should just enjoy horror as it is. It's fiction. Hey there, kids, it's me, Mr. Creepypasta, and once again, it's the end of tonight's video, so I want to tell you all thank you for listening or watching, however you hear my voice. Whether it be on YouTube or on the podcast, thank you so much for being here with me. There's going to be a new story every Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday night right here on YouTube, or if you're not watching on YouTube, that means the podcast gets updated on SoundCloud, Apple, Google Play, and now the podcast is on Spotify. So if it's easier for you guys to listen there than it is to listen on YouTube, then hey, not such a bad deal, right? As always, any support you guys give towards Mr. Creepypasta's Storytime really does help me out. I can actually keep the lights on in the house, and I can get nice little cat treats for Hercules. Okay, sorry for taking up so much of your time. Thank you guys for listening once again. And sweet dreams.